Started. So first thing I want us to do this morning is to just do a little mental exercise. I want you to picture yourself. Maybe you're already past this point in life. Maybe you can picture back to this one, or maybe it's going to be a future day for you, but picture the day that you retire, or the day that you retired. Okay. In scenario one, in the first scenario, you're at your $1 million mansion on the coast somewhere, surrounded by your career accolades on the wall. Maybe this isn't your scene. You're eating breakfast and you just decide, I'm going to go out for a ride on my yacht. But the thing is, you're alone. You haven't talked to your kids in like 3 months. You try to call one of your former coworkers, but they don't answer now because they don't have to, because you're not working there anymore. And so you go and you take your boat ride completely alone. So that's one option. The second option is this. You're at home in your Western PA, 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom, little house of 40 years where you've been. There's some things that need fixed today, but that can wait because you're going to spend the day with your spouse. And then you're going to go and pick up your grandkids and get ice cream. And you're going to call your coworker. Your coworker calls you at some point during that day and congratulates you on your retirement. And then you end the day just catching up with one of your kids while you're watching your grandson's game. Which option sounds like a better option to you? I would say most of us would choose the second one, right? Even if yachts aren't your thing, maybe substitute it for something different, right? Most of us are going to choose the second option there, right? Most of us would choose the second option. Let's even do one more just for fun. Picture not just the day you retire, but the day that you die. It's the day that you're going to meet Jesus. You're going to meet God. Okay, in the first scenario, you got your $1 million mansion. Again, you've got all kinds of nurses there just to take care of you, your personal nurses. You're at your house, your mansion. You can have your view of whatever you want to see, however many cars you want in the garage, all your stuff still there. But again, no one comes to visit, no grandkids, no friends, no kids. The nurses, they really don't want you to be around you because you're rude and grumpy to them, but they have to because they're paid to be there. And you just have this anxiousness about you that day. Okay, that's the first scenario. The second one then is you're at this old, smelly nursing home with gray walls, and your roommate has the Wheel of Fortune blasting on the TV, and there's just this sound of health equipment in the background, and you don't have any money, you don't have anything but the clothes on your back. But every single day, your room is just flooded with people coming in to visit, kids, grandkids, coworkers, church friends. The people want to be around you. The nurses love to be around you because you're just full of God's love and joy, and you have nothing but peace and thankfulness in your heart for the life that you lived. Now, again, which would you prefer? Most of us, I would assume, are going to pick the second option. Now, here's the maybe more important question even than that. On the current road of your life, right, the way that you're living, the road that you're walking down right now, is it more likely to lead you towards the first scenario or the second? Right, the way that you're living right now, which scenario, which ending is it leading toward for you? And I just wanted to share that this morning to get you thinking about what it means to follow Jesus, what it means to walk on this narrow path. As we dive into back into this series that we've kind of taken a little bit of a break from, but I just want to remind us what this is all about. The whole point of the narrow path is to say, okay, as a follower of Jesus, first of all, we're saved by our faith, not by our works. So nobody gets onto this narrow path by doing these things or by earning it. That's the first thing we have to remember, that our salvation was purchased for us by Christ when he died and rose again, and when we put our trust in him. But there's also a way that leads to life and a way that leads to destruction. That's what Jesus was talking about in Matthew chapter 7, which is what this whole series is based on, when he says, "Enter by the narrow gate. The gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those that enter by it are many, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Okay, so sadly, as I was saying before, right, if you have put your faith in Jesus and truly trusted in Christ, right, that is your salvation. That means that you are a Christian. Like, you no longer trust in yourself, in your own works, your own ability to be good and to earn it. You've trusted in Christ. That's what makes you a Christian. But I'm sure some of you have probably sadly been around the Christian who is still miserable, the Christian who still doesn't want to really live life, who's bitter, the Christian who's angry at people around them, the Christian who has no joy and love and peace. Yes, they might be saved. They might be going to heaven. They are, because they believe, but they don't have any joy. They don't have any real freedom. They're not really alive, living the life, right? Because he says the way is hard that leads to life. And so this verse, while there is an application of eternity, it also talks about our life. It talks about the choices that we make every day, day in and day out, choices that either lead us down a wide path, which leads to destruction of our life, or choices that lead us down a narrow path, which leads to life the way God intended it, the way God wants us to live, and what God wants for us. So this is what this series is all about. Just to kind of review just a little bit. So the narrow path is one that leads people out of slavery through the wilderness and into freedom. All throughout the Bible, God literally did this with his people, and he figuratively does this today in our lives. He leads us out of slavery to sin, slavery to ourself, slavery to the world and the systems around us, through the wilderness of life and into freedom. If you remember this graphic, there's some extra if you want one. Chesney, if you want to pass those. If anybody wants one, you don't have to take one. But this is just a reminder of where we've been at and what we've been doing. So we talked about how the middle place on this graphic is where we want to be, where all of us want to be, right? We want to live in freedom and transformation. We want to have love, joy, and peace in our life. But often we find ourselves on the outside, the wide path. And the wide path starts in the place of shame in the bottom left. Shame is the first barrier to freedom. And I think shame is evil's greatest tool. It's when we believe that something is fundamentally flawed in us, that we have no value. But we talked about how the answer to shame is to realize that we have value in God, that God loves us, that he chose us, that he calls us his own. That is the way out of shame. But if we don't get out of shame, that leads us to the next. If you go up and to the left, the very left side of that graphic, there's the place of loneliness, just to review where we've been. That's what shame does in our life, right? When we feel shame about ourselves, then it leads us to hiding and to isolating, to pulling back from relationships and things that God created us for. He made us for connections, but we feel shame, we pull away from those things, and we end up in this place of loneliness. The way out of loneliness is to truly connect with others in an authentic way. But if we stay in shame and loneliness, it leads us to the next place, which we didn't really, I didn't talk about, but Derek, when he was here, talked a little bit about the place of achievement. It leads us to the ladder. Okay, I like to call it the ladder, because when we feel shame and loneliness, that leads us to try to do something to get us out of feeling that way, to get us out of feeling like I'm not worthy, I'm not enough. And what it leads us to is this choice. I can choose to climb the ladder of life, so to speak, right, and to do better, to perform more, to earn love that I think that I need to earn. It could be you trying to do that through school as a younger person, or through sports, or maybe as an adult through your work or your career, your relationships. This can even be religion. You can try to climb the ladder of your religion, of your faith, to try to earn more and to perform, to earn love. The point of this place is that this is the place of achievement, the ladder, and the way out of the ladder is to humble ourselves and to live with passion instead of achievement. Passion is about being willing to suffer for something, working for something that's important, more important than me. So it's not to say we don't work hard. That's not what the place of achievement is trying to say. Place of achievement, we can still work hard, but we're not working hard to climb the ladder personally for our own success and gain. So that's just a review of the last three, of where we've been, which brings us to the place today. So if the place of achievement last time was about what we can accomplish, this next place is about what we can consume, about what we can get. I call this the place of chasing. we find ourselves chasing the wind. And this is a phrase out of the Bible book of Ecclesiastes. So if you have a Bible with you, if you want to turn to it, or if you want to follow along on the screen today, that most of the passages will be up there. But go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes is where we're going to be at today. So the book of Ecclesiastes. This book is part of the wisdom literature of the Bible, of the Old Testament. So Proverbs, Job, Song of Solomon, those kind of books, it's called the wisdom literature because it talks about what it looks like to live a wise life in God's world that he made. But the book of Ecclesiastes is a little bit different. It's not the kind of wisdom you would expect to hear, especially in the Bible, right? If you're familiar with this book at all, there's a surprising message and theme throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. So let's dive in. Verse 1 says this, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem." So this word preacher, first of all, it could mean teacher or preacher. There's different views on who this is. Most scholars believe that this is written by Solomon, that he is the preacher or the teacher. So if you know who Solomon was, he was one of King David's sons. So it matches up with that. He was also the king in Jerusalem at one point. And so it matches up. It could have been Solomon. It doesn't tell us outright that it is Solomon, but it's fair to assume that it probably was him. But anyways, so he's telling us, the preacher, the teacher will refer to him. He gives us this message, and the basic message is found in verse 2, which says this, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." That word vanity sometimes is translated into English as meaningless. It's actually the Hebrew word for smoke or vapor. So think of it again as smoke and vapor, all is smoke and vapor. That is the message of this book, right? Crazy. It's a crazy message, but there's 38 times that this phrase is used throughout Ecclesiastes. He's saying life is kind of like vapor or smoke in the sense that you can see it, like we see it, we can see it, but we can't grab onto it. It's temporary. It's fleeting. It's going to disappear at some point. Trying to grab onto it is impossible. And what the point that he's going to make throughout this book is that when we try to find meaning in life or wisdom apart from God, it's like chasing after smoke. It's like trying to grab on to vapor, something that's you can't grab onto when we try to find meaning apart from God. So with that said, let's dive into what he says. We're going to look at chapter 1 and 2 pretty thoroughly today. So if you look at verse 3 with me, he says this, "What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuit the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full, to the place where streams flow. There they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been will be, and what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, 'See, this is new'? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after." What a joyful message, right? He starts off the whole message of the book by saying everything is basically how it's always been. There's nothing new under the sun. If it's been done before, it's going to be done in the future. And no one remembers the former things, and no one's going to remember us or you in the later times, right? That's a crazy way to start a book on wisdom. And here's what his point is. He seems to be making this point that there's no meaning. It seems like, at least, there's no meaning to life, right? Why? What is the point of life? People are born. People go through life. People die. People get forgotten. Where's the meaning at? Then he says this, about how since there seems to be no meaning, he sets out to find that meaning and what it is all about. He says in verse 12, "The preacher, I the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I applied my heart to seek out and search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and is striving after wind. He returns to this word of vanity or smoke or vapor, this idea. And this time he says it's a striving after the wind. So the Hebrew there is really cool because it's both words that start with R. It's reuth, ruach. And so reuth is striving after, longing for something. And ruach is wind or spirit or breath. So literally he's saying life is like you're striving after, chasing after something, the wind, something that you can't actually grasp onto. Looking for meaning in life apart from God is like doing this. And so he goes on to say in chapter 2 how he looked for meaning and the different places that the teacher would look for meaning and for happiness in life and in this world. And there are places that we can actually look today that a lot of people are looking for meaning and purpose in still today. And so let's look at what those are. Skip ahead a little bit to chapter 2, and we'll look at four different ways that he looked for meaning and purpose. And he's going to describe them to us. So verse 1 of chapter 2, he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart to how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. And so the very first thing that he's going to test himself to look for happiness and pleasure or purpose in is pleasure, in finding more pleasure. Enjoy yourself. That is the main point of what he's saying here. Enjoy yourself. It sounds like it could be the mantra for today's world, right? Just enjoy your life. And here's what he's saying. Like, there's a difference, guys, between enjoying what God has made us to enjoy. There's a good sense about enjoying those things. Things that God has made us to enjoy, like a good sunset or good food to eat or time with friends and family. Those are good things to enjoy. And there's plenty of those things. But what this is saying that you're trying to find your ultimate meaning and purpose in life and just maximizing your earthly pleasure. This is total hedonism is what he's describing here. And it's very much a part of our culture that we live in. I want to share this this quote with you because I thought it was so good. I know it's long, but I wanted to just share the whole thing because it really hits on ahead what the teacher is talking about and how it is so applicable to our culture that we live in today. This is Pastor John Mark Comer. He says, humanistic propaganda screams at us everywhere we go. You deserve better. There's no one like you. Stand up for yourself. And after a while, we start believing the mantra. The most influential culture-shaping document in American history is the Declaration of Independence. And built into the ethos of American society are three inalienable rights: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I think the wording is ironic, the pursuit of happiness. It's almost like the architects of modern democracy said, we guarantee you life and we promise you liberty, but happiness, good luck. America is a social experiment founded on the pursuit of happiness. Hundreds of millions of Americans are chasing down happiness. Money, materialism, sex, romance, religion, family, and fame are all pursuits of the same human craving, joy. But apart from Jesus, we never get there. Right? This is what the teacher found out. He found this out the hard way. This is what so many Americans and people all around us every day are searching for, are trying to find meaning in their life through gaining more joy through these different avenues: money, materialism, sex, romance, religion, family, fame, all of these different things. We live in a culture that is built around maximizing pleasure here. And it's all about trying to fill the emptiness of our hearts that we truly feel with more whatever it is, more entertainment, more sports, more video games, more phone time, more whatever you fill in the blank, right? I thought it was I actually just Googled the word binge this morning because I think it's interesting that we now use that word in our culture as like a good thing. I just Googled that word and it was like three Netflix shows you need to binge. And I thought like, man, 20 years ago, maybe, I'm guessing, I mean, I was only 14, but just like, I feel like nobody would have used the word binge in a good way, but yet now it's like a good thing. People try to make it to be a good thing. The point is, we live in a very hedonistic culture centered around pleasure, just like the teacher did in this text. He goes on to describe a different way that he tried to fill himself, a different way that he tried to find the meaning he was looking for in verse 4. So read verse 4 with me. It says, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted them in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought female and male slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. Let's back up a little bit there. So he's talking about all these different things that he built, all these different things that he had, right? All these material possessions, all that he had and that he gained. He goes on in verse 7, I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been in Jerusalem before me. And I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of men. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. This was my reward for all my toil. So he tries to fill up his life now, not with pleasure, but just with stuff, with money, the stuff that money can buy. He had all the stuff. He had all the possessions he could ever need. He had all the entertainment. He literally like bought entertainment and brought it to his house. Kind of like it would be like us like taking Sight and Sound Theater in Lancaster and like bringing it to our backyard or something like that. And so he had everything that he needed. He had all, from the world's perspective, all of the stuff. And our world today is just like this, right? It's thinking that more possessions will make us happy. That just a little more stuff and then we'll be good. And that's not, it's not bad. Like, I just want to make this clear too. All these things aren't necessarily bad. All four of these things, right? To have pleasure or joy in life, that's not necessarily bad. To have money and stuff, that's not necessarily bad in itself. What's bad is when our money and stuff have us. When our money and stuff is what we live for. It's when we find our meaning and our joy and our happiness in the stuff. This is the culture that we live in as well, right? We have talked about how we live in a pleasure culture. We also live in a money and stuff culture. America not only was built on happiness, it was built on consumerism in the last 100 years. There's all kinds of ways, we're not going to go into it. You know it just from being around and being here. We live in a culture that says to us every day, if you just have a little more, you'll be happier and you'll finally have what you needed. But here's what he says it is. The teacher says it was all vanity and a striving after the wind. He says, I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. Behold, it was all vanity and a striving after the wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. If we go down this road and try to find our meaning in stuff, we will find the same thing, that it's just striving after the wind. He goes on, we'll finish out the chapter, verses 12 through 17. I'll go ahead and read from there. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. What can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, and as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will also happen to me. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity, for of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance. seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So I hated life because of what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a striving after the wind. Here's the point in this section is that even if you're more wise, if you gain knowledge, if you make your life and meaning about just gaining wisdom and knowledge, the same thing is going to happen to you in the end that happens to the fool, that happens to those who don't have that meaning and that wisdom. And the event that he's talking about is that we're all going to die. The wise and the fool are going to the same end. And so this would be us trying to make meaning in life and out of wisdom and knowledge. Maybe it's just like how much you know, or maybe it's how you're learning, how far you've got, like in school or whatever it might be. In the end, it's just like vapor or smoke. It's pursuing something that you can't actually grasp. It's a striving after the wind. And so last one then, as we almost close out the chapter, he says this in verse 18. I hated all my toil for which I toil under the sun. He's kind of going back into just work in general. He says, I hated it all my toil, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he will be a master for all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. And so the final way, he thinks, I might just give my life to my work and my career and see what happens. I'm just going to build this business up, or build this corporation up, or whatever it is, and I'll become the best at fill in the blank, my career, my thing. In the end, he says, this also is vanity. It's like chasing after the wind. When we try to make our career or success our point of meaning and our point of wisdom. So here's the thing, right? Here's the summary of these verses. The place of chasing, guys, is the place where we fall into the trap of more, whatever that might look like. More stuff, more pleasure, more success, more wisdom. It's wherever we fall into that trap. It's where we think, if I just had a couple more drinks, a little bit more vacation time, if I just had a little bit more money, then I could be happy. If I just had a little bit more success, then I would be satisfied. You probably heard the saying before, how much is enough? Just a little bit more, right? Because we never actually are satisfied with more. And so the way that we know that we're in this place of chasing is by looking at our inner world, our emotions, and what we're feeling. This is part of the reason it's really important for us to know our emotions, because it points to kind of where we're at in our walk with God. And so when we notice that we're experiencing a lot of fear, maybe it's not like a conscious fear, maybe it's more in the background, but fear is when we feel like we don't have enough or won't have enough. That is when we know that we're probably in this place of chasing. And maybe that fear could show up in different ways, right? Fear shows up in different ways in all of us. There's no one way that fear shows up by itself. But for some of us, it shows up in worry and anxiety. And so that's one thing we need to notice. We need to notice when I'm worrying about something, why am I worrying about this, right? Why am I feeling anxiety? Now, I know just from personal experience and family and friends and those kind of things that a lot of people deal with anxiety, and it's more of a medical condition. And I'm not denying, like, I've never denied that there's medical things going on, that there's actual people that physically experience more anxiety and some less. So I don't want to deny a medical aspect to mental health or anxiety, but I think a lot of times people just ignore the spiritual aspect. Yes, there's a medical, a mental, a physical aspect, but there's a spiritual battle there as well. Whenever we feel anxiety, it's one of those unspoken battles, like Jenna mentioned at the beginning. That's one of them that we experience every day. There's a battle going on inside of us, a battle of fear, a battle of worrying about something, whether we might have enough or not enough or what's going to happen. Here's the thing about anxiety. Anxiety exposes what we worship. What we worry about is what we worship. Whether we actually go to worship it or not, whether we think about it that way or not, when we are worried about something, it's because we are holding on to that thing because we think that that's where we find the meaning and the joy and the purpose in life. So if we find ourselves constantly worrying about money, which I'll be honest, sometimes I find myself in that place, we need to evaluate, okay, what's my relationship with money? Am I worshiping money or am I worshiping God? If we find ourselves worried about our kids and their future and their success and constantly just worrying, fretting about that, we need to think, where did I get these kids, right? Who gave me these kids in the first place? God did. And why did he give me them? To worry about them? No. To care for them, to love them, yes, to teach them, but not to worry about them because ultimately he is going to take care of them. Or if we find ourselves worrying about our career and our success and our job and just doing well, we need to stop and ask, why am I worried? Why do I have this much anxiety about this? What is it telling me about what I'm believing about God and about myself and about who I am and my place in this world? When we have worry and anxiety, we need to stop. We need to ask ourselves those questions, the deep questions that a lot of times we don't get out, that we don't really talk about. Because what that will help us do is to understand, okay, this is why I'm feeling this way, and this is what I can do with it now. This is a better place that I can take this, and I don't have to live in this fear. I don't have to live in the anxiety because I know that God will take care of me. And so when you're tempted to live in this place of anxiety, we all have to just practice this. Stop, step back, find yourself, when you find yourself tempted to live in this place of chasing, you just have to step back and ask yourself, okay, why am I feeling this way? Why do I feel this fear or anxiety deep down? So think back to the beginning, right? To the retirement place or the deathbed someday, and which path you want to be headed for. Which path are you on right now? Which path are you, which path are you on currently? So before we do that, let's close the day with Ecclesiastes and give this the last word. Next week, we're going to talk more about how we get out of the place of chasing. What's the narrow road out? What's the way that we go to get out of the wide path on this one? But I just want to close with Ecclesiastes 12:13. This is the very end of the book, and it says this. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So after all that talk about wisdom and about life and meaning and purpose, in the end, it just comes down to this. Fear God and keep his commandments. The only place that we'll find a real, true meaning in life of what this is saying is in a relationship with God. That's the whole point of the whole book of Ecclesiastes. It's not to say that God isn't, that we can't find meaning in those, or that we can't have those other things like joy and all those things. We should, but the only place we can truly find meaning is in God and in a relationship with him. And looking for that meaning in anything else is chasing after the wind. It's like striving after something that you can't hold on to. So with that said, just want to encourage you, think about your life, reflect on your life. Think about where you're at in life right now. How might you be striving after the wind? How might you be chasing after something that is just an illusion instead of enjoying and experiencing life as God created you and where he wants you right now? Because in the end, this is the most important thing, your relationship with God. Are you fearing him and growing in keeping his commandments? Or are you living a life that is just chasing after the wind? Let's pray.